Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. This is the podcast where two best friends get together once a week to help each other make sense of the world by asking and attempting to answer its most trivial and lowest stakes questions. I am writer, comedian, and reluctant podcast host Daniel O'Brien, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, writer, comedian, and American father, Mr. Soren Bowie.
Yeah, I would say enthusiastic podcast host. If anybody's forcing us to do this, it's me.
Okay, so when you say you would say enthusiastic podcast host, you mean that of yourself, or are you correcting me about what I should say?
Yeah. No. I'm certainly not correcting you. You have dragged your feet at every opportunity.
I will continue to do so. You'd never guess that I'm seated this entire time for the amount of feet dragging that I'm doing, the audible feet dragging that I've done on this podcast. But you'll hear from me, you'll hear from Soren, you'll also hear from our CFO, Mr. Bacon. Bacon, do you want to say hello?
Hey, Dan, how Daniel. Are you?
What the fuck am I, chopped liver?
So right out the gate.
You say hello to one
Bacon
host?
Bacon has done everything wrong.
We already did our niceties.
Anyway, once again, the show is Quick Question, and we like to start off by thanking our listeners, a.k.a. Quick Jagger and Charlie what? Okay. So here's why I did that. So Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones, I made it Quick Jagger. And the drummer of the Rolling Stones is Charlie Watt. And I made it Charlie what? Because it's a show about questions.
Yeah, no, I like this new avenue that you've taken where we're now looking up the thesaurus for the word question. Just to see what else we
can. But anyway, we'd like to call out one review selected completely at random from one of our listeners. And wouldn't you know it, this randomly selected one gave us 5 stars. It's from DJ Problem Solver. And this person writes, "So it has become a staple for me to listen, laugh, nod in agreement, or disbelief in their answers to the quality quick questions. I wanted to make sure I rated this the 5 it deserves, but at the same time, acknowledge that I lack the Daniel to my Soren, or vice versa, as the day decides. I find envy in their broship they have. It's infectious to listen to. Bacon, you the man." Couple of things about that. One, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. We appreciate every review, and that was a kind thing for you to say. I was really... I love a Bacon shout-out. We know that I'm a huge Bacon fan, even though he routinely biffs opportunities on this podcast.
Every opportunity he's had so far stumbles out of the gate. Face plants.
No, people have attached themselves to Quispy Quesadillas to a level that no other name has gotten so far.
Today on Twitter, you wrote the Quanald Quacks, which I stared at for a long time. And I shouldn't have because I was driving, and I was like, "What does he mean?" And I was like, "Does he mean Donald Duck?" that wasn't even my first thought. It was, does he mean Donald Quack? Who is Donald Quack?
Another colossal failure. But another thing that I liked about this review is this person saying, "I lack the Daniel to my Soren," or vice versa, "as the day decides," which, first of all, I love the poetry of "as the day decides." And second of all, I hadn't considered the fact that there would be listeners out there, questioners out there, who some days they're a me and some days they're a you. I feel like this was chained to my neck at birth that I'm a me, and it's you can't escape it. I don't some days be Soren.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of nice, though. It's nice that you could wake up any day and you could be anybody you want. That you might have like your very best day. I don't know which is which, and I don't want to speculate.
I want you to speculate that. I want us to talk about this on the show. Like, I think if I had a gun to my head, it would be Soren is when I wake up and I'm Soren, I'm confident, and I rule the day. When I wake up and I'm Dora, Dan, I can't even fucking get my name right.
Dora.
If that doesn't tell you everything about this dichotomy.
Well, go on. When you wake up and you're a Dan, what happens other than you stumble?
Less confident.
Out of bed,
and I'm nervous. I stand in the middle of my apartment and I'm holding a sock in my hand and I'm like, I know I'm supposed to do something with this, but I just can't think of it right now. That's a standard Daniel morning.
Here's how I would break it down. When you wake up in the morning and everything is just sort of falling into place for you and going right,
yeah,
that's a Soren day. When you wake up and you're on and like you're killing it and like the work that you did is paying
really?
Off, that's a Daniel day.
Okay. So it's natural charisma versus preparation.
Yeah, I think it's like God-given talent versus ball IQ, basketball IQ out there on the court.
It's a LeBron James versus Chris Paul.
No, it's situation. Like J.R. Smith. Like, I'm the J.R. Smith of this situation. Like, J.R. Smith can give you some of the most profound dunks you've ever seen in your life, but that motherfucker doesn't train. He doesn't have any, he has zero ball IQ. Like, that's why he plays off the bench.
But I thought, in addition to using this question as a way to alienate all of our fans who don't care anything about sports, I thought it would be, have we ever talked about on this show, like how we became friends? Do you know? Do you remember? No.
No.
I mean, it's not the nuts and bolts of it is not the most exciting thing in the world. We worked in the same building and my boss at the time knew that you were a comedy person and a writer person. You just happened to work for an adjacent content site at Demand Media where we both worked, and you were on the side creating sketches and articles for Cracked, and he was like, you two should meet because you're both roughly this, you're in the same age group and you're both doing comedy, so you should meet. So we set up a lunch where we all went out to lunch together, which is not a good story, but the part of the story that always resonates with me that I think about as like a testament to what a good person you are, that I was in Los Angeles for, I think, a month at this point. So I moved in July, and then in August, you came up to me. We'd only had the one lunch at that point, and you very diplomatically, very matter-of-factly were like, Daniel, do you have any friends? And I was like, no. Like,
I think you have any friends, yeah, friends, yeah, in Los Angeles.
It wasn't just like you weren't like it was just prepping me to bully me. You weren't doing recon to ruin my life. You're like, do you have any friends in Los Angeles yet? And I was like, ah, ha, 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 ha. No, not a single one. I don't do anything. And you very kindly invited me to a party. You were just like, I couldn't go to that party at the time, but it was enough that you had set it up like, there's going to be a party at my apartment. There's really nice people there. There's going to be great folks there. It's a rooftop. There's going to be, I can't remember if it was a pool or a jacuzzi, but you described a very nice party and you were like, you will meet a lot of people there. And I couldn't go to that party, but I already decided I don't need to meet a lot of people. I've decided Soren is my friend now. And then just palled around with you like one of those yappy dogs in a Looney Tunes commercials that just like bounces around the more powerful dog.
We have very different memories of this event then, because I mean, I do remember, I know how hard it is being in a new place in a new city where you don't know anybody and like everyone's already established their friend groups and people don't need more friends. Like when people have lived in one area for a long time, they'll meet people and they'll be like, oh, that person was really nice. All right, yeah. Well, back to my life. And they don't make the effort to then be like, well, let's hang out with them more often, especially guys. Like, guys don't do that. And I've been in that situation before. And I was I saw you get to LA. You still looked a little like wonderstruck. Like, this all happened at once. You had to move out here for your job.
Yeah.
And you knew no one. And I was like, I've been there before. I'll introduce you to some people that I think are really great. They're my friends. And that will be fun. But I also, when we went on that first lunch, the setup for that lunch was that Cracked was going out to celebrate that you were there. And Orin just happened to invite me because he was like, you do a little bit with Cracked. Why don't you come too? And during that lunch, I was like, oh, this guy's great. Like, he's really funny and he's smart. And I was like, oh, I'd like to hang out with him more often. Like, the one thing that you never do and when you already have your established friend group, unless somebody's like really great, unless you meet somebody who you're like, God, that person was so funny. Or like, that person knew all the same stuff I knew. And then you want to spend time with them. And so I was like, then I would ask you, do you want to come play poker? Do you want to come to this?
Yeah.
Do you want to come to this event with us? Or when I found out that you were volunteering, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll come volunteer.
Yeah,
with
it
you.
Was
So I don't think either one of us was necessarily like the big boss, little boss from the old cartoons where one's a dummy and one's just abusive. Like we both of us were like, oh, I like you.
I learned a lot from you about male friendship and reaching out, because that was not a thing that I thought to do. And even separate from male and female, yeah, like you have a friend group. Like I could see someone in my 20s that seems interesting or seems nice, and she'd be like, well, shame I've already got the correct amount of friends. Don't need to upset that balance by adding another one, even though I like this person. Like that was an unheard of concept until I met you, and you were just like, hey, let's hang out. And I remember early times where you would like, we didn't know each other that well, but you would like on Yahoo Instant Messenger, send me a link to an article from a different website that wasn't either of our websites. And we're like, what is this? What do you want me to do with this? And you were just like, I read it and it resonated with me. And I thought it might resonate with you. And it was like, ah.
I want to share it.
Okay. Shared experience, eh? All right. I'm on to your tricks.
Yeah. It's that. So, I mean, I know what I look like. I look like a Joffrey. Like, that's just, that's how I go through life. And when people first meet me, they don't want to like me. That's like, I give off a vibe that's very, I would say, punchable. Like there, and so to counterbalance that, I've spent a lot of my life being as kind and as nice as possible to not give them a reason for that and to try and change that. But that's only like on first blush. Then after that, you were somebody who, you made a lot of great jokes during it. Or like when we would IM at first, I was like, he's really funny. And you seemed like a good guy. And I was like, I'd like to hang out with him more often. And so I really made an effort, which I occasionally do. I did that for Alex Schmidt, too, when he first moved to L.A. Because he moved here. He was a really nice, he was like, this is going to sound really sappy. But like people like you and Alex, they're, you can just sort of tell with somebody like when the first few times you hang out with them, like if they're a good heart, and like you don't hurt good hearts, like you encourage that because everything else in the world is going to try and hurt a good heart. And so you need somebody there who's going to like foster that and be like, no, don't change. You're perfect. Don't change. Like you're doing everything right.
This is too sweet. I don't even know how to get out of this. Bacon, you want to blow this moment? Can you please jump in with literally anything?
Yeah, Dan, when I first met you, you were doing that thing where you were taking over a conference room and booking it and calling it your office. And I didn't know your sense of humor yet. And so I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I need to book this conference room for a meeting. And you'd be like, do you want me to get out of my office? And I'd be like, I just started here a week ago.
He wasn't even writing in there. He was in there playing One Tap Quest.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Glad we got that. So now that that's all out of the way, let's get into the show. Hey, Soren, quick question. How did it feel your name as a written by credit on television? Because that has happened since we last spoke. I was watching TV. I DVR'd it to watch it. It was an episode of American Dad. It was very funny. And on the screen, it said written by Soren Bowie. It was just your name, written by Soren Bowie. I took a picture of it. I sent it to you. How's it feel?
Yeah. Pretty surreal. Also because with the first episode on a show, it's so little of it is actually yours. I mean, the people who actually know what they're doing are rewriting a bunch of it. So there's that episode from my original draft went through another 4 rewrites after that. And what little there is, like my fingerprints are faded on that, on the final product. So it's like a nice gesture basically. But it doesn't really feel like mine. Does that make sense? So it was cool to see my name on television. I thought that was really neat, but it wasn't like, oh yeah, this is mine. This is my baby. I hope everyone really likes it.
Follow-up quick questions. One of them is just like an industry inside baseball question, I guess. Just so people know, this is an animated show. This came out last week. What was it? July 29th? Was that the date? July 29th? When did you hand in your draft of the script? Do you remember the date?
Yeah, I do. I'd turn mine in February 26th, I think.
And that's a standard turnover time?
Sorry, that's of 2018. Yeah. So I turned it in February 2018, and it didn't air until July of 2019. There were two women on the show who their episodes, they had already been on the show for a year before I started. Their episodes didn't air until about 2 months before mine.
Another quick question on this same subject. Did you watch, like, did you have make an event out of watching it with people when it happened live?
Yeah, I did. I watched it. So I don't get TBS, but I happen to be in Colorado, which is where
that's tough.
My parents live. Well, my hands are tied. There's no way I can get it. TBS is just, I don't know, cost prohibitive maybe.
So good.
That's the most soaring thing I've ever heard in my life. You're like, well, I can't reduce my earthworm costs. So probably can't put together that TBS package for the show I ran on.
I crunched the numbers. I can't do it. A lot of that is going to go towards my climbing slippers. I went to Colorado and it happened to be on during that time. And so I watched it at my parents' house, and then some good family friends who are also over 70 came over and watched it. Now, they watched it without any context. My mom has very little context. I think my dad's the only one who's seen more than 3 episodes of the show, so has like a vague idea of who everybody is. And they came into it blind, and they were...
That's fantastic.
They were not fans. Yeah, and my wife, Colleen, she was also there, and my son. And my son was like laughing at stuff, which is really great. Obviously not the right parts, but like people would make a face in it, and he'd be really into that. And then... My wife is not, I don't know that she knows all the etiquette of being an audience member. Like, she knows better than certainly my parents or the Marshes did. But she's turning me every once in a while. I'm going, it's good. And I'm like, oh, don't do that. And then I can tell that it's like going downhill fast with the other family that's there. And my parents are kind of like, tolerating it. And then at one point my mom chimes in because she came to the table read, the first table read that I had. I invited her because I thought that was so cool. And she was like, they changed a lot of your stuff. They changed a lot of it. And I was like,
yeah,
yeah, they did. It's good. Like, I still like what they did. She's trying to like drive a wedge between me and the rest of them so that to like protect me from our family friends.
That's a very
like, no, he didn't write this. Very somebody else post. Ruined it.
Like,
he wrote something
perfect
else.
From his hands.
and so she was trying to do that. And she, there's a suicide in it. And she, that's where she really started being like, no, this isn't the one that he wrote. And I was like, no, I mean, that was in it from the beginning. Like, pulling her down with me, just drowning us both.
When you guys, I have a question for you guys. When you write something and it's either not received as well as you thought, or you're watching it with other people, is that the same feeling as being on stage and having like a bombing experience? Or
No. I think it's worse to bomb on stage. You're looking at the audience that way. But at least I have something to focus on that's not one of us. Not them or not me. Like, we can just all stare at the television. We don't have to look at each other's faces. It's like why it's easier to have a really deep, hard conversation in a car than it is sitting on a couch together.
I guess I watch things differently, because when I was first out here writing for Last Week Tonight, I would watch with my brother and sister-in-law because I was staying with them at the time. And there's no episode is written by one person. We all work on every episode in some capacity. And a lot of times I know which specific jokes that made it onto television are my jokes. So now I am sitting there watching my brother and sister-in-law watch the show to see, because I don't tell them in advance which jokes are mine. I don't tell them afterwards either, because that's gauche. So I just wait to see if they laugh at a joke that I wrote. And I have so much invested in that. And like when I'm doing stand-up, I'm like, I'm on stage and I just think like, I could turn this around, or if I'm bombing, I'm bombing, or whatever. But now I'm just sitting here and it's like, it's what's done is done. I know my joke is coming up and I'm going to see their reaction and hope they do it right.
Yeah.
They do.
Do
yeah.
they laugh generally?
But I think they're generous okay, people and they're very comforting. Kind. So I think they laugh harder at most things when they know they're watching it with me.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Just in case, like they're covering their bases. Like any joke that feels like it could be Daniel's, they're like, oh yeah, that felt like that, yeah. that was italics in the script. That's got to be Dan's.
But I had one final quick question, which is actually a longer quick question about this. It's going to be kind of like a roundabout way of getting at
it. Yeah, go ahead.
And it's, do you ever intentionally lower your expectations out of self-preservation? And the reason that I'm saying this is relevant to what we're talking about right now is I remember watching the first episode I did for Last Week Tonight with my brother and sister-in-law, and I'd already seen like the taping happen, so I know that the audience reacted to jokes. I know that the episode went well, but the only thing that I was thinking of was they're going to show the credits at the end where they have all the writers' names, and I had mentally prepared myself, A, they're going to... I'm new. It's my first week here. They're going to forget to put my name in the credits, and that's fine. Just assume they're not going to put your name in the credits, and they'll apologize at work the next day, and they'll, in future airings of the episode, they'll put your name in there. But just get ready. That's going to happen. If that doesn't happen, they're going to spell your name wrong. They're going to do O'Brien with an A. Don't worry. It's going to happen. Just deal with it. It'll be embarrassing, but like now that you know it's going to happen, it's going to be fine. C, they're going to do Dan instead of Daniel. One of these three things was going to happen. They're definitely not going to say Daniel O'Brien in the credits of this show. So put that out of your mind. Accept it's going to be one of these three fates. And then I'm either... I get exactly what I expected, or if they do the thing that I'd wanted, I'd privately hoped for, Daniel O'Brien, then I'm just surprised. And luckily I was surprised, and like it shouldn't have been luckily, because HBO is a company full of adults, and they do these things all the time, and I'm part of a union that takes this kind of thing very seriously. So I should have just walked into the situation knowing that they would have gotten my name right in the credits, but I still couldn't allow myself to do that. I need to lower expectations so I can only be surprised. And I wondered if you ever do that for anything.
I mean, I do, but man, those are all the iterations that you had planned out in your mind of what would go wrong. Like that doesn't come from nowhere. You've been clearly burned a few times.
Back to like in high school, you went to a smaller high school. So I don't know if this is a situation that's going to translate, but we were in a slightly larger high school, and when you turn like driver's license age on your birthday, everyone goes to take the driver's test on their birthday. That's the thing you do. As soon as you're allowed to take the driver's test, you do it. You take off school that day, you take the driver's test. And there's like so much pressure built up to that, because you know, oh, it's this person's birthday. He's not in school. He's taking the driver's test. Let's see if he comes back with his license. And I was so nervous that I was going to fail my driver's test, not because I was a bad driver at the time. I mean, I was, but I didn't think that because I was a child. But I just thought, I can't handle the pressure that people are going to be wondering if I passed my driver's test or not. So I just told everyone in advance, hey, I'm not going to be in school on my birthday, but I'm not taking my driver's test that day. I'm just taking off for a different reason. I have to wait a certain amount of months to take my driver's license test because I filed my paperwork late. So was this whole thing because I assumed I would. Yeah,
like
I assumed
a passport.
I was going to fail, and I didn't want to tell anyone that. But I was like, for sure, you're going to fail. And that's going to be bad, but it would be worse if people knew that you failed. So just like, don't let them know. And then I had to like sheepishly come to school the next day and be like, hey, by the way, guys, all my best friends, I got my driver's license yesterday. I lied to you about not taking it.
What?
Yeah, just in so me to assume.
It's
like,
just in you to, for
yes,
sake of
it's
self-preservation.
Absolutely self-preservation.
I mean, I feel that a little bit. I had that with really big events in my life. Like when I got this job, like I was like nervous to tell people because it was just like, it doesn't feel real yet. It doesn't feel real until I sign something. And I know it can be pulled back at any second because I don't know if I've told you a bunch of this, but when I got out of college, I was trying to be an actor in Los Angeles. And, what a lot of that is like you go in for an audition, then you come back for a callback if they like you. Then after that, you come back for maybe another one. And then you go to a screen test. And then they're like, all right, well, they've got you on a veil. And what that means is that they've booked you out for a certain amount of time where you're not allowed. Like, they're like, don't get another job during this time because we want you for this role. And then at the last second, it can all fall apart. And it's not just like they chose somebody else. It's like the whole project gets shelved. There's like 100,000 reasons that this thing could go wrong. And then when people, you're at a party or something, and somebody's like, oh, you're an actor. Okay. Or have you been in anything? Like, what are you doing now? You can't tell them that whole story. You just have to be like, no, I'm not working. I have another job where I test DVDs. And like, and so that kind of good news, like didn't feel like I was going to jinx it, but it felt like, man, this stuff goes wrong all the time. And I don't want to be in that situation where I then have to backtrack, where I tell somebody this thing and then they ask about it. And then I have to be like, oh no, it didn't actually happen. But I think everybody kind of feels that. The only time I can really say that I felt what you're feeling was with my son when he was born or like about to be born, where I was just like in the back of my mind, prepping for something to go wrong. Like that something would be bad here because I didn't want to be in a situation where I wasn't prepared for that. And so my brain was just going through basically everything that could go wrong and like planning out for those scenarios. And then somehow I'd be more prepared, emotionally prepared for it. So like when Colleen had like a tough labor, when we finally had him, it was sort of a shock to me that like everything was good and fine. I was like looking him over and like,
right. He didn't come out as like a bag normal. Full of spiders or whatever.
Right. Yeah. He wasn't a litter of puppies. He wasn't any of those things. And, then the pediatrician comes through and like, they manhandle your child for a little bit and they do the same thing. And she's like, he's got this like weird, swelling next to his ear on the back of his head. And I was like, yeah, that's the thing. There it is. Oh, that's no problem. Okay. I can live with that. He has that for the rest of his life. And then, you know, that went away and I was like, what? And then it really affected me throughout like the first 3 months of his life where I was just expecting this other shoe to drop in a very dark way where I was like, it's too good. Everything is too good. This can't be, I don't deserve this. Something bad is going to happen. And I had this very ominous feeling for a very long time that I couldn't shake. And it infected
gone
me.
Now? Okay, good. Yeah. Because your son's perfect. Did you hear about that? Did you read that story about the 7-year-old in India? They found he had jaw pain, and his mother was worried it was a tumor, so they brought him to the doctor, and it was that they found 576 teeth.
Oh, shit. No, I did hear this.
In his head that they had to pull out.
Yeah. Yeah. My son has been to the dentist a few times, and I've been like, I want him to take x-rays because I'm so curious about the inside of a child's head because those adult teeth are already in there. And so if you see the inside of their skull, it's just like there's teeth on the bottom
just
and then there's
waiting,
these big
just
fuck off
to
teeth over
debut.
The top of them that are just waiting. Yeah. No, I didn't. I hadn't read the story, but I just saw the headline for it.
Yeah,
I don't think I need to look at that.
there's apparently a kind of tumor that grows teeth and hair. And this kid had one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And teratoma tumors. And they can have nervous systems. Like when you touch them, they shrink back
from
you, even when they're disconnected from the body.
they can grow them in like non-teeth and hair places too. Like you can get like...
Oh, yeah, ovaries and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you'll just get like a batch of teeth and hair somewhere weird.
Oh, God.
Go for it.
Dan, I have a quick question for you. Speaking of friendships... We're both in our 30s now, and I've realized in my later life that there are like tacit rules of friendship that I have that I'm
quietly angry at my friends for when they break them, even though we've never explicitly said what the rules are. But there are certain things now as an adult that I just don't, I don't think friends should ask of each other. And I was going to ask you, do you have a set of rules in your mind that things you just won't do for a friend now that you're 30 and that you think is almost insulting if they ask you to do?
Might be a major difference. Is there, there's a list of things. This is a very Irish Catholic thing to do. There's a list of things that I think it's wrong for a friend in their 30s to ask me to do, but I will still do them. But I do quietly think like, oh, he broke the rule. Like I don't think someone should ask me to help them move at this age, no matter what. And that's actually probably for the last like 7 years of my life. I don't think you should ask me to help you move. I'm sooner to like if someone asked me to help them move right now, I would be like, how much do movers cost in your town? I'll just pay for that. That's the friendship thing that I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it passive aggressively as a way of letting you know that you should have been doing this already, because it's absurd to ask friends after a certain age to help you move.
I completely agree. If a friend today asked me to help them move, I'd be like, what's going on in your life? Like, is there, I mean, obviously you don't want me to actually help you move. Do you just need to talk about something?
I'm trying to think what other things. Staying, if you're gonna, like, I like to take trips with friends a lot, like get cabin together, go, we're gonna do this for 4th of July, we're gonna do that for some kind of winter celebration thing. I'm past the point in my life where I'm going to not sleep in a bed somewhere, unless I'm camping, obviously. But if it's like, yeah, we're gonna get this house and, like, you know, you're gonna double up on beds and some of us are gonna sleep on couches, like, no, thank you, if that's the situation, like, I'll get a hotel near there and join you for festivities, but I'm not going to sleep on the floor because of my back and neck.
I think I was witness to the moment that that happened for you, because we've been on some trips with Cracked where we slept in uncomfortable situations. We slept on couches and stuff, but I think I was there. We had done a trip to Idlewild to go film our Star Wars series, and we were all in these camp bunk beds. And for the first night, and then after that, you went, no, I'm not doing it. And you said, I'm going to go rent my own place. And the camp does that. The camp, like, rented out the nurse's office.
I mean, to both of us, you were there too.
Yeah, well, once I found out that you could do it, I was beds. Like, yeah, I'm on board with that.
I want my own room. So we each had our own rooms. I don't want to be in a loft that is designed for like 9-12-year-olds that are now full of a bunch of sweaty 25-year-old crew members farting with complete abandon. It's like, no, this is, I make too much money for this.
I've outgrown this. Yeah. Another one that I do, and I'm really genuinely pissed off when people ask me to do it, I'll still do it. But when a friend's asked me to take them to the airport.
Yeah. That's, When did you stop doing that? When did that stop being an acceptable practice for you?
I guess it probably was around the time that maybe the Uber and Lyft started.
So that's pretty recent.
I would still take people occasionally. LA is a different story as well, because it's so big, and the idea of going to the airport is a half day event. And that's a really big ask of somebody, and you can't say no. And that's why I get so angry. I'm like, well, you know, I can't say no to this, you motherfucker. And so when somebody asked me to take them to the airport, that is putting an unnecessary onus on me. It's like, I know you have other ways to get there. There's the flyaway. Like, there's a bus that costs $5. That's very easy to get to. Just because you're too lazy to go do that, you're like, no, I'll get a friend to take me. Oh, maybe Soren will take me. When we worked at Crack, before I worked at Crack, when we worked at Demand Media, there was a woman who came up to me, and I didn't know who was my superior and who wasn't there, because it was a big company. This woman, Lori, and she was like, I was wondering if you could take me to the airport this afternoon. And I was like, hell yeah, opportunity to prove myself. And as we're going, I'm realizing this is our CEO's assistant. But she had she had no jurisdiction. Like, that was not a sanctioned event. She was like off to see friends. And And she asked me to drive her to the airport during rush hour. And everyone around me was like, don't do it. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I already committed. I thought she was my boss. And I was so upset about that. And then I think after that, I was like, no, you don't ever put that on somebody else.
It's
you can
because,
find a way to the airport.
I mean,
airport.
I have a bunch to say about this. It's tough because growing up in Jersey, which is very different from Los Angeles, we have like the two airports. We have Newark and Atlantic City. And also pre-Lyft, pre-Uber. I mean, there were taxis, obviously, but none of them, you know, you're not going to get a taxi from Hazlitt, New Jersey to Newark Airport. And for many years, for decades of your life, airport trips are a thing that a close friend or family member does. That's like a very normal thing.
Yes.
And so I understand the impulse of people to be like, who is someone in my new life who will take me to the airport and reach out to like a Soren type, for example. But I also know, like thinking back now, I had you drive me to the airport once in Los Angeles. And when I was living in the Valley, were you in Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
In retrospect, this is a terrible thing to do. To have you drive from Beverly Hills to the Valley in the morning to pick me up out of Sherman Oaks and then take me to LAX. You should have fucking killed me. You did that.
I can't believe I did that. Honestly, like looking back on it, that doesn't sound like me.
It was very kind of you, but I was still like early 20s. So in the mindset of like airport rides are reserved for people who are close to you. That's Soren. He will do that.
Right.
And I made you do this horrible trip. That's like, that's your whole day at that point.
Yeah. All the way to the Valley and back. That would be, especially if it was a weekday, but I don't know. I don't hold any animus against you. I feel like that's or animosity against you. That was that's
it's
gone
fine.
From
Do you
my
think
memory.
If I'd asked you when we were both in our 30s to drive me to the airport, would you say? Is there ever a circumstance where you would say no, where you'd just be like nope?
Yeah. Well, first I would say with you, I would say why, and then I would give you all the other options that you had available to you. Because I would assume, no, Dan's a logical person. If I just tell him these other things exist, he'll do that instead. But yeah, I mean, eventually anybody would drive to the airport to this day, but I would be resentful. Oh, you know, it's different with family though. My parents still drive me to the airport when I visit them.
And take me to the airport. My brother will pick me up and take me to the airport. And that's the kind of thing. Like I don't feel bad putting them out at all. In fact, with our family, it would be more insulting if I said, no, stay home. I'm going to get to you my own way. Don't worry about that. Like that's worse at that point in terms of, repressed Irish Catholic madness. If I had gone to the airport and then taken a cab without taking someone up on their offer of kindness.
Yeah. I'm realizing a lot of my own personal little rules are actually monetary based. They're like, once you're in your 30s, you should be able to handle this on your own with your own money, which maybe isn't entirely fair. Like splitting the bill at a restaurant. I get sort of heated about. I'm just like, just let me fucking pay it. I don't care.
In your notes before we did this episode, what do you mean by that? The splitting the bill at a restaurant. What are you talking about?
I mean, if I go to a restaurant with friends, like we actually make the plans, like we're going to go out and maybe it's just one other person. I don't want to then at the end of the meal, have them like look over the check and be like, okay, let's see. Well, I had this drink. We split the dessert. So I'm just going to split that in half. And like, they're trying to actually split the bill. I would way prefer to just give it to me. I'll pay it. And next time you can do it. Or like, we'll work something else out because I hate the idea of pinching it down to like each penny and being like how much each person owes.
I feel the same way.
It drives me crazy.
Like, I want to be past the point of like, we're going to turn the receipt over and we're each going to write down what we want to pay next to like the last four digits of our credit card. And just, at that point, I'm just like, we're going to have food together again at some point. And this will all balance out in the wash. Right. And like, if it sounds very privileged when I say it like that. It sounds like money is no object or whatever. But it's still like, even if you are pinching pennies at the time and you really want to spend exactly what you want to spend, then that's fine too. Like I'll cover it. Your friends will cover it. It's going to be fine.
Right.
Don't worry about it. I don't know. This conversation is running away from me.
You guys too are. I bet you're okay with you're yes, okay with splitting 100%. The bill in half, right?
Like yeah, give that's two fine. Yeah, that's fine.
I think that's the difference.
That's fine. Yeah. It's when people want to like go through each and then they'll be like, well, I'm going to wait to put tip in until I see what everybody else puts in. Like that kind of shit. I'm just like, it drives me nuts. But I don't think it's just monetary because there are other rules. Like I don't want to be asked to go to your show anymore. I don't want people to be like, oh, look, I'm graduating from Groundlings 101. Like it would be really nice to get a lot of heads there. Like you're going to serve a purpose as opposed to, I think you would really like this. I get very upset about that now, quietly, of course. And it's because I think I value my own time more now that I'm older. Like you actually can put a value on your time in a way that you didn't when you were straight out of college. In my early 20s, it felt like I had this inexhaustible bounty of time. And I was so philanthropic with it. I would just give it away. And now that I'm older, I'm like, no.
You're older and you also have a son. And so left to your own devices, that's where your time is.
My day's already pretty full.
Ideally.
Right. I think you're more interested in kind of like the idea of the adventure when you're young too. It's like, oh, well, this will be interesting. Maybe this will turn into something. Maybe this will turn into a story in my life if I do this thing for this person. But the rewards never meet the expectation in those types of situations. And I'm just like, this is my time and you should value it. Like I think everyone should value their time more and we just don't. We treat it like it's free, especially on the internet too. It's like, not to get off track here, but you get into a fight with somebody on the internet. Like you're like, man, don't give that person your time. That's like the last person who deserves your time. That's yours.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I should really put together a list in my head and then just disseminate it. Be like, listen, everybody, these are the rules. I'm going to operate by them. I would appreciate if you did too.
Certainly don't want to sleep on the floor or double up on a bed or sleep on a couch. I don't know. I feel like big parties I don't want to go to.
You guys missed a great one too that I think someone mentioned about you don't ask anyone if you're going to stay somewhere. You don't ask to stay more than like 2 days max.
Yeah.
Like that one drives me cuckoo when people are visiting for like 6 nights.
Yeah. Again, yeah, family does not count. I'll have my family stay with me as long as they want. But when a friend asks to come into town, they're like, hey, I'm going to stay for a week. You're like, are you fucking kidding me?
A week is
a week.
A week is too much.
You're going to crash. yeah, I'm with you. I would say 2 nights, 3 days. Yeah. Like that's a good amount. And if you are going to stay more than that, you have a lot of work to do as a guest. Like you're going to be cooking a meal maybe two of those nights. You're going to be, you should go to the grocery store for them, even if you don't eat any of their food. And like you're making your bed each day. Like it's not an easy job to be a house guest when you're in your 30s because you know how important it is.
I just had
a house guest
for a week. And so I can't say anything because I know she'll listen to this podcast. So even if I'm not speaking directly about her, she'll assume I'm speaking directly about her. But I can just say that I broadly agree with
Sora. I just had one too. I had one too. I don't know if they'll listen to this, but it was somebody who was like, hey, I'm coming to LA for a week and I want to stay with you. And I know this person has other friends in LA and they're not even going to make the effort to like bounce around. And so I go, okay, here's my plan. I'm going to say, give me the dates. And then I'm going to say, no, I'm away for the first 3 days.
Smart.
But you can come for the next two or three. And did that. And this person said, oh no, that's cool. I'll just change the dates of my trip. And changed it so that they could still come for a full 7 days.
And I was just that's a bad, I hate that
and
person.
And then didn't rent a car. So like,
in your case, I blame that person. In my case, I will always blame me because I have this strange mental hangup where I can't not let someone know that they can stay with me whenever they're in town. It's like, I don't know how to say goodbye at the end of a conversation. If I meet someone who is not from in the past LA and now New York and I meet them and we're having a conversation and I don't know how to get out of it. I'm just like, well, if you're ever in town, let me know. You can crash with me for as long as you want. Bye, I love you. I don't know. Like, it's a real problem of mine that I let everyone intimate and casual and like new acquaintance, no matter what our level of friendship is, I will always tell people that they can stay with me and that it's no problem. But I want America to know it is always a problem. I'm just trying to be polite because I want people to like me, but it kills me inside when we do this.
Yeah, I don't expect anyone to take me up on that. With that's happened to me once where there was in college, and even in college is the time when I think you can get away with that kind of shit, and it's fine. We're all kids. We don't know what we're doing yet. But there were these two people who were saying, oh, we're going to try and road trip from LA back to Connecticut, where we're from. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, if you're through Colorado, look me up.
Monsters.
And they did. And then they came and stayed with me and my parents. And I didn't know these people very well. I thought maybe like, oh, you're coming through Colorado. I'll buy you some pizza that has honey on the crust. No, they wanted to come stay at my house. My house, where I live.
We met when we were children. We were 11 years old. We did a play together. We did a local theater knockoff version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves that was called something like The Enchantment of White Princess because we couldn't get the rights to the real one. And we met in this play, 11 years old, and we had a showmance, which is a portmanteau of show and romance, which happens in every play that has ever happened in the history of plays. And we were like, we are cute and we like each other. And we used to write letters to each other for about 2 or 3 years, starting in sixth grade, and then lost touch, as people do, and then got in touch again many years later. She is now like a Broadway actress, and I do whatever it is that I do. And I was talking to her over the internet in Los Angeles, like, do you remember when we met? It's crazy. You're doing so well. And she was like, yeah, I'm really happy. I get to do theater and tour around a lot. And I was like, oh, well, if you're ever in Los Angeles, let me know. You can crash here. And she was like, okay, I will. And then she just did. Showed up in Los Angeles when I was like 26 years old. We met when we were 11. And she was like, I'm here. I'm in LA for 2 weeks. Yeah. And she did. She like stayed in my apartment. And I was like, yeah, I guess you could stay here. And it happened to coincide with the second week of the 2 weeks that she was there. I was going to Hawaii with my family. And I was like, I'm not going to be here for the second week. I guess if you want, I could just give you the keys and you can stay here. And she was like, okay, yeah, great. And she just did.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah.
She stayed in your apartment without you. Let me also, knowing how chivalric you are, let me guess that you gave her your bed and then 1,000%. You slept on the couch while she stayed there?
Yeah, I figured.
Okay. That's brutal, man. That is rough.
It was she was one of the better house guests I've ever had, honestly. Kept to herself.
That's good.
Kept the apartment clean.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say family is totally different. Like if my sister-in-law wanted to come stay with me, that would be fine too. I'd be totally for that. Like extended family. That's all a totally different story. But when a friend should know better.
And like, we're barely friends, this woman. She's great. We both live in New York now, so we see each other more. But it's still, it'll always be really strange to me that she was just like, yeah, okay, I'll stay in your house. That's fine. I'll stay in your apartment. And even at the time, I was thinking like,
what goes through that person's head?
What are you telling your parents? Where do they think you are? If you're like, oh, do you remember Dan from The Secret Enchantment of White Princess or whatever the fuck that was? Yeah.
I'm going to stay with him. What's he been up to the last 2 years? No idea. Could be in prison for all I know. Yeah, I may have just gotten out on an early release. No idea.
Oh, cool.
All right, well, we're out of time, Dan. I'm going to look up all of our social accounts, but before I do, you had told me that you didn't think the wage gap was real, and you just wanted to take some time to talk about that.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that for every dollar that a man makes, a woman makes 70 cents, which is insane. So, like, I go to work, I'm working all day, I make, let's say, $50. And then a woman who is not working makes $0.70 mm-hmm. for every one of the dollars that I make of that 50. That's absurd. If I mean, you've misquoted me. I believe there's a gap. I just think that it unfairly punishes the man. Is I suppose the logical extension of this argument that I started making.
It's, I find that when I do these as well, like my idea is to be like, yeah, I'll lean into this. Oh God, I'm leaning in really far. And then the ground just starts collapsing and I start getting sucked down into this horrible vortex of saying really terrible things. That was wonderful, Dan. Thank you. You can follow Dan O'Brien on Twitter at DOB_INC. That's DOB Inc. You can follow Soren. That's me at SOREN_LTD, Soren Limited. And you can follow Bacon, our CFO, at Make Me Bacon, Please, PLS, as please. And that's no spaces in between. You can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel at Gmail. And you can find us on Twitter, though, well, you can find Quick Question on Twitter. I don't know how active the account is. At QQ_Soren and Dan. And here's the real doozy, Instagram. Not a single post so far as I know. QQ_with_Soren_and_Daniel. Get on that now because I think it fills up. I think that
just
like,
a few
point,
more slots available.
That's following
it
on Instagram. Yeah. You can also find Vincent. He's our sound engineer and our editor. You can find him at siliconbeachpodcast.com, especially if you want to hire him. And that's, oh, we also have a Patreon.
We're losing patrons.
Are we really?
Oh, we lost a few.
Oh boy. I wonder what the turning point was. Can we send out like a Survey Monkey and find out what made them stop?
/quick question.
Jesus Christ.
Patreon. Patreon.
That's a bad job. I'm sorry. Well, next one I'll do.
All right, bye.